Hi, I'm Kim.
And I'm Tora.
And this is our podcast, Kicking It with Kim and Tora. Thank you so much for joining us today. So as always, we have four topics, 15 minutes each. And without further ado, we're going to dive right in. Our first topic is how mothers destroy their sons by being emotionally abusive.
And I have so much to say about that. I mean, you can jump right in, but I just, of course, we both have sons. And I feel like we both raised our sons, not as single women, but as single mothers, because, you know, father might've been over there, but we definitely are in the house with our sons.
Right.
And what people don't understand is there is no blueprint on raising young men. Like, you don't want to be too soft. You don't want to be too hard. You don't want to baby them too much. You don't want to, it's so many things you don't want to do so they can still hold on to their manhood, because people will tell you, well, you know, it's no such thing of, you know, making a child feminine. And I just don't believe that. And I'm not saying gay. Gay and feminine to me, people, are two different things.
I agree.
You know, but I do believe if your child is so solely wrapped up in his mother and around his mother, he, you know, starts picking up on her, you know, femininity. I just feel that way. I've seen it happen too.
But that led to gayness in that particular case.
Because I don't know anything, and I probably will never in this lifetime know anything about actual gayness, you know, of how it actually is, like if there is chromosomes missing or more chromosomes or missing.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Physiological or mental, I don't know.
Because I do know there are some guys who might say, well, I'm a man and I raised my son and he's gay. And I'm, you know, and I don't know mentally what that takes on. I don't know if he's trying to be the feminine one because you might've wanted a girl, or the feminine one because he, you know, lacked mom. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'm not even here to even pretend how someone becomes gay or whatever. I just know about being feminine and a man. I've seen it. I've seen a straight man who only wants women, have no desires whatsoever to be with a man, but he's so feminine because he grew up in a house with sisters. So
I've seen that too, and I've been turned off by that too. And I don't know if they're gay, but
right,
if you're having certain movements and speaking in a certain way, I'm not going to be interested because you're too effeminate and you may be totally straight, but it's a turnoff for me. I don't know how other women might feel about that.
And just to pick up on this question that we have is, are the Black mothers destroying their sons? And I feel like we're not. I feel like we're overcompensating because dad isn't around and dad isn't picking up the slack where we can just be the feminine part that he does need to show him how to love and show him how to be soft with a woman or his daughter, or just, you know, because men do have to have a soft side. You got to be able to say in a tender voice, hey, hon, how are you? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You can't just pick up the phone and say, yay, dude, what's up, to your wife. That comes, I feel like, you know, right. I feel like mom can teach you that. I feel like you can practice on mom. When you call mom up and you say, hey, mom, or hey, you know, how are you? Love you. I feel like you become more comfortable doing those things when you have mom. But then you got dad to put his manliness on you, you know, and we don't have to do that. But when we're single and we're in the house with the son, we don't get a break. And people always want us to be both. They're like, okay, yeah, I heard you had to check your son, but now pamper him up. It's like, nah, I can't right now. He seriously was doing some messed up boy stuff.
Okay. So, I mean, I think that sometimes our sons, when they grow up in the house with us, mimic us. They mimic, and I don't even think it's intentional. Like, it's just a human thing. They mm-hmm. mimic our speech patterns. They mm-hmm. mimic our hand gestures. Mm-hmm. And all of those things are effeminate because we're women.
I agree.
So my son had a friend who actually, believe it or not, grew up in the home with his mom and his dad. But somehow he was closer to his mom. So yeah, his speech pattern was more like hers. His movements were more like hers. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately it turned out that he's gay. I don't know that one thing has to do with the other, but yeah, I noticed very early on that he sounded like her. Everything he did was like her. And that was in the house with his dad. So
But remember back when we were young and our grandparents were in our lives, they would always say the boys couldn't be up under the females. Remember that? They're like, don't be all up under me, or don't be all up under your mother. Go play outside or go somewhere.
Well, the children take all together. Well, honey, they told the children all together, go outside somewhere.
Yeah, go outside, play some basketball. You are boys.
Get out of grown folks and go outside.
Yeah.
But this is the part that I thought you were getting at. We were looking at a social media clip from an Ayanna Van Zant show where I think the mother said something to the effect that her son was no good something like that. And Ayanna said that the mother was being emotionally abusive and women don't understand that they destroy their sons by being emotionally abusive towards them.
I was more so leaning all of that to the same thing, because saying that he was no good, I felt like she just didn't have the words to articulate what she really meant. So like I said, that comes from we're not having a blueprint on raising our sons, because if dad was around, or if dad heard her say that, or he had dad somewhere really close, like he could run to be like, you know, mom just said, she said I wasn't any good and I wasn't worth it, you know what, like, oh, that she crazy, she always saying that, she don't know what she talking about, you know what I mean? Like, he could just easily blow it off and be like, don't let it get to you, trust me, she said that to me all the time. And he could look at dad like, well, you're doing great and she talks to you like that too, okay, well then I won't take it so personal, maybe she don't have the skills or the verbal knowledge to be able to communicate what she's saying, because he could, I'm just saying, a son, right, could really do some messed up stuff, you know what I mean? They have a word that they say, F-boy stuff now, but she could really witness that. Like, she could witness him treating a girl really bad, or she could witness him, you know, talking to her in a way that you don't talk to any female. And she's at her wit's end with it, so she's striking back with words that's all she has. She physically knows she probably can't take him on. And if she do, she's gonna have to seriously hurt him. So she's saying words that she probably shouldn't say, but who has that blueprint to stop in the moment and be like, I probably shouldn't say what I'm feeling right now. I'm so angry with him. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to say I hate you very, very much, but instead of that, I'm going to say this. You know, because I remember when I was younger, before I had my daughters, I heard this mother tell her daughter she hated her. And I was like, why did you say that? How did you say that? She was like, you don't understand. You don't have a daughter yet. But when you do, I promise you, you'll refer back to this day. And I swear on everything I love.
I've never told one of my children that in my whole life.
He haunted me. There has been times where I can seriously say my children have gotten under my skin. Just my daughters, really. My son is maybe mad at him, but my daughters have made
daughters me have a mouth. They tend to have a mouth.
Right. So I'm not saying I hate them to their body and soul, but I hate their ways, which in retrospect, if I'm not knowledgeable about my words, come across as, oh, I hate you. You know what I mean? But no, I don't hate you, but I hate your ways right now, that your ways are making me hate you. But no, I understand that. So, but I'm smart enough to be able to go in the room if I do say some hateful stuff to my children or spiteful stuff to be like, look, I'm sorry, I was mad. I have anxiety and I have panic attacks and sometimes I just lose it and I don't even know what I say, but I know I probably said some stuff to upset you, but can you forgive me? So I have what if a mother doesn't have that?
I've never said anything like that. I don't really even feel that sort of thing. And it's not because they don't do anything to get on my nerves. It's not that we cannot really go at it. I don't really know why. I never felt that. I've never said it. I've never called them a name. Never.
But you gotta say, I don't feel like all kids,
none of that,
ever challenge their parents either. I don't feel that way. I feel like some kids, I've watched kids grow up in different households. Some kids I would take a million times over because I'm like, oh my God, they are so sweet.
No, both of my kids have challenged me. My son used to do it when he was in high school. We went through a rough patch. And my daughter, we even just had an argument, I don't know, last week or whatever. And you know, we can yell at the top of
the moon last week. I said something must was in the moon last week because we had some stuff in here.
Right. So we can go for it. My son and I used to go for it. My daughter and I can go for it. Mm-hmm. I just don't say those things. And I think when I was coming up, there were some relatives in our family whose parent used to call them a B and whatever. Mm-hmm. And they just turned out.
In a loving way or in a sassy way or in a demeaning way?
No, like, I don't know. Oh yeah, no, not the way people use. I don't really use that word that much, but not the way people use it now, but you little B or whatever, like And they turned out to have like some significant drug problems and this, that, and the other. They weren't my first cousins, but they were related to me. And I think I just got it in my mind back then that I was never gonna do that because I didn't want my kids to turn out that way. So we go for it and we have been known to argue. And you know, I'm pretty fierce. So I'm gonna get it out.
Right.
And I'm not mad that they'll say something back when they do, because I don't want you to go out in the world and be a pushover. So you have to learn how to stand your ground. Sure. But I just don't say those things. But I don't know. I mean, I think
if you go out in this world and get pushed over, they're going to have something to pay for when they get in touch with me. Because I'm going to tell you, the way they give me a practice, I'm talking about, you could buy them the world, you could give them the world, and they will turn right around. You ain't did nothing for me. What do you do for me? And it's
the kids say that?
Yes. Yes, you don't do nothing for me. What do you do for me? And I just be like, cracking my neck.
Everything that's ever been done for you. Are you kidding me right now?
No, it's almost like they looked at the movie, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner with Sidney Poitier, when he tell his father, you created me, or you born me, you supposed to do everything, whatever. I'd be like, even in that movie, I was like, boy, you have lost your mind.
Oh, wow.
You have lost.
I mean, I think that certain kids, or sometimes kids can say things that trigger you in a way perhaps you forget they're your kids.
Yeah.
And like, okay, you know, I know you didn't go there, and then it's just on. You
right.
Know?
And another thing is, like my daughters, we did a thing on my YouTube channel with my mom, and during that, and she was like, yeah, you know, you got mad at me for saying that somebody was you know, like a mother figure to me. And I said, sweetheart, you said it in the wrong content. I said, the person that I said was like a mother figure with me was like a mother. She took care of me. She put a roof over my head, clothes on my back, food on my table, made sure I got up and went to school every day, made straight A's, checked my homework. When I was sick, took care of me. I said, the person that you talking about, I paid them to be in your life. Your coach,
no, not the same.
Your coach is somebody I paid to be in your life. When I stopped paying, she was out of your life. That person who I'm talking about is still in my life to this day and didn't get a dollar for what she did for me. You can't keep comparing the two. Like, they, in their mind, they want to think like me and be like me, but it's like you can't, because you haven't even.
You mean they'll hear the things you say to your mother and then want to
talk? Or in life, or just in life, you know, they'll hear the things, because my mother was offended that, that I call my stepmother my other mother or my bonus mother. And I had to tell her, well, mom, you forget, there was a time when you put me out on the streets at a young little girl age where I couldn't fend for myself, and I went to live with her. It was better. It was a lot better. It was excellent. You know what I mean? She gave me the foundation that I own and have now. It came from her. You know, like, I would have never graduated from high school ever. There was no one graduated from high school. I'm the first.
Wow.
I'm the first to even take college courses or go to college. Like, literally, you know, when I finished dental school, I was so excited.
You set the tone for your brothers and sisters?
And everybody under me, every single person. All my brothers have their associate's degrees. One of my brother, he just graduated literally the other day with his bachelor's degree. And my sister-in-laws, they're all educated. My brothers did not marry anybody. I mean, they all have their master's degrees. My children, my son has his. My daughters have, like, literally, no one under me graduated. My sister didn't. My mother didn't. My dad didn't. My grandparents didn't.
You told your mother that lady gave you the foundation that you stand on today, and without her, you wouldn't even have had a diploma?
No, I've never needed to say that. She actually filled in those blanks. Okay. I don't need to say that. Clearly, she wants to take credit for saying, you know, and I stayed on. I was like, no, you didn't. Like, but I let her have her roses, like my kid said. I'll let her have her roses however she wants to smell them. But no, she didn't have that foundation built in me and installed in me at all. She didn't check my report cards and check my grades. And when she got my first report card and saw that I was a stellar student, she said she almost passed out. And that was in elementary school. Well, I went on to high school and still did good things. You know, I wrapped up a whole year of, I had a baby, went back to school and did night school, summer school and day school and finished so I could finish.
That's phenomenal.
That was like, it was installed in me. You know, it was like, oh, this is not the end all be all. I got to go further than this. Mm-hmm. And I only surrounded myself with college educated people after that because of my stepmother's, you know, projecting education because she's a doctor. Oh. She literally went from dating my dad, living in a house with me, to leaving my dad and going on to become a doctor.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's like really the...
Phenomenal. That was our time, but this is a personal subject. If you want to keep talking, I'm fine to keep talking, or we can move on. It's up to you.
Oh, no, I think we covered it enough because it goes to show that, you know, when you're living in a house with someone, sometimes there's somebody who can do a better job than you. And when I saw that mother on Ayanna Van Zandt, I felt sorry for her because I felt like I probably had walked a mile or two in them same shoes of saying things or berating a child or berating my children, but I always apologized.
I'll say this one thing because I saw that episode. It was in last season. I don't watch every episode, but I did see that one. You and that mother aren't in the same position. You have raised your children. Like you said, you go back if you do say something and apologize and make it better. Mm-hmm. That lady didn't raise them. She left them.
Yes.
The things that she was saying to them were horrible.
Yes.
And Ayanna said, do you see the look on his face? Yes. Mothers destroy their sons by being emotionally abusive. So I think it was a good jumping off point for conversation, but you are nothing like that. I mean, that was some
and
of the-
And I guess I just felt bad because I felt like he was looking for something in her that she was just incapable of giving.
I agree.
I've seen so many of those relationships, like Keisha Cole's the singer, and her mother who recently just passed away. Like I watched their reality show and I know it's only a smidget of their life, but you can fill in the blanks that mother, whatever haunted her in her soul, just wasn't capable of that motherly thing that some people
She and her sister needed. Cause I watched the first season, it was some years ago, right? Mm-hmm. I watched a bit of the first season. She had another sister who was bouncing around with alcohol, men, whatever. And but you know what? Just truthfully too, and maybe we can talk about this more in another topic because I don't think my mother can be the mother that I need her to, that I want her to be. I think I'm okay if I really, I mean, you know, I'm fine, but it was difficult. I mean, she can be a friend, but she's never really been the mother that I needed her to be. So that is something that perhaps-
I get it. We can definitely come back to this and talk about this because I think it shows a lot of who we are to be able to understand that. Because I'm at that point in time in my life where I just have to say to myself, she's not gonna change.
Never gonna happen.
She's not gonna change. So either you love what this is, and not saying calling her the this, I'm talking about her actions, her ways, her love, her motherly, whatever that is, you either gonna love that, accept that, or either not have anything to deal with it. So
we definitely need to come back because I went to a retreat with Ayanna Van Zandt previously, some years back, and she and I talked about this. Mm-hmm. So let's come back to that another time.
Let's do that. Maybe we can have her on our show. That would be nice.
I don't know. It'll come on our show, but I can tell you what she told me about it. Okay, so here's topic number two, which is African spirituality. And you were saying that you saw a clip from a Joe Rogan show.
Yes, one of my favorite podcasters. And I really hold him in high esteem. And when I hear him say things like the African god, maybe you can say the name correctly for me.
Ogun.
Mm-hmm. And I never heard anything remotely even close to that name ever. And it was not even... He gets things like I get things. Like you can say something in the middle of a conversation and he'll pull it right out. He'll be like, hold on. And that guy was not even talking about Ogu in a way that we would want to be educated. He was more so saying he could hype up this fighter to make him think he was a god because they revere this god. But that was his main focus of the conversation, was just the fighter. But Joe Rogan, being like me, was like, hold on. What did you say? Who? What's going on? And he was like, well, how come I've never even heard of this? And we got it at the same time, because that's all. I paused the podcast at that point and started doing my homework on Ogu, because I was like the same way, like, hold on, who's this? And why haven't I? And when I heard and saw the images that are already up there, so this has already been talked about, because there's posters of this beautiful black muscle-bound man that's godly and goddish. Warrior. And
Ogun is a warrior. See, for you to say, why haven't I heard of that? That works for me. For a white man to be saying that, because it's none of your business, because can we have African spirituality for Africans and African descendants without y'all being all up in it? But, you know, that's a whole another topic. But those, most, as far as I'm aware, most people who follow African spirituality do not consider them to be gods. They are symbolic of different aspects of the divine.
Now let's take this quick moment to recognize our sponsors. We will now return to our current episode.
Entity or different aspects of nature or something like that. So there are a whole bunch of them. There's like Ogun, the warrior. There's Shango, who is like the ladies' man. There's Oshun, who is like the goddess with the honey pot and, you know, the waters.
You have to get an artist to draw all these out and then you give us a teaching, because I have no idea.
They're everywhere. I've been knowing about them for a long time, and, you know, maybe 8 or 10 years.
Do this on your Raising the Vibe, maybe?
I should do.
I'd love to tone into that and see you point out all these gods and what they do and what, it's so many people out there that want this knowledge, but we don't know where to go to get it.
And we do. And, you know, remember I had said that I was raised a Christian, but I'm not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to get into African spirituality. And this is a part of that. This is a part of African spirituality, in addition to ancestor reverence, not worship, reverence. No. Mm-hmm. And all of these, they're called Orishas. And so there are various ones with various characteristics.
And I did come across that word Orisha, and I was just like, ooh, what is that? You know, what does that word mean?
I love all of that. And, you know, I actually won a DVD. There was some contest that a group I follow on Instagram sent me an email. I don't have time to see this stuff, but they sent me an email and they said, we're having a contest. Mm-hmm. And the first person who can come up with the name of something like the traditional African priest is going to win something. So I, you know, typed in my answer. And then like a week later, I actually won a DVD that teaches you the introductory principles of African spirituality. Now, I have not sat down and watched that yet, but I just feel like it must be something I need to know, because whoever wins anything like that,
I would love to come and watch that with you. Love that.
Okay, we should do that. But, you know, I think it's important for us to understand about African spirituality and to understand about ancestor reverence. Remember I told you that when I would tell my mother that I'm not going to be a Christian anymore, mm-hmm. and I'm going to get into African spirituality. And I also think that African spirituality is where we, as Africans, when we ruled, got our power. I personally think that all these white gods and white angels and white saints and all that from white prophets from all of these other religions weakened us and allowed us to be conquered, because we established all the civilizations. We are original man. So we had to have something strong going. And I've always been wondering, how do we get so broken that they could, you know, treat us like cows, like cattle, and do everything that they've done for us? And I think that one of those things is this whole religion thing. And if you just notice, like, Asians have Buddha, who looks like them, even though even though I've read that original Buddha
with their locks in their head.
Negroid features, yeah, but the ones they use now look like Asians. Indians use those, whatever those people are, whatever they are, they look like Indians. Latino, you know, everybody has divinity that looks like them except for us. You walk in our home, there's a white man, a picture of us, Cesar Borgias.
Listen, it's so funny because I know we've talked about that. Like my grandmother had the plates, the Reverend Ike, which I see on my TikTok all the time now.
Reverend Ike was the bomb though, wasn't it?
Until you and I talked about that and I had my phone near me when we were talking, I never saw a clip. Now on every TikTok I pull up, there's Reverend Ike. And I've never even heard one preaching of him when we were growing up. My grandmother just had the plate with his face on it, looking up. Remember the old Olin Mills?
So I remember Olin Mills photography.
Yeah, you remember that they had that significant pose where you looked up and the light was coming in. Well, that was kind of how his picture was. And then there was the Jesus, you know, with his picture with the, you know, the blonde Jesus, the Caucasian Jesus. And I just remember those two. And then there was the state building. I believe there was a plate of the state building or something she had gotten from one of her.
But Tora, wasn't it you who sent me a post from Reverend Ike? I saw a post recently.
I definitely probably sent Reverend it because I was probably trying to tell you this was the man who my grandmother was on my grandmother's wall when we were growing up.
But the clip that I saw of Reverend Ike, if I'm not confusing him, had him telling somebody, God is within you.
Yeah.
You are all of that.
Yeah. That's why I sent it, because I didn't know he was that deep. And I was thinking, maybe that's why my grandmother was on it like that. Like I remember when I said to her, Mom, how can that be Jesus? Like, how did we come from that? And then the picture disappeared. Ike stayed up there, and the Capitol building stayed up there, but Jesus disappeared, and I don't know what happened to that. And it was, do you remember what I'm talking about, those plates?
I know the little plates that you used to have on a stand, and I know that Olin Mills portraits, at least in this part of the country, that was the standard. If you could go to Olin Mills, you have done something.
That was the gold standard, and that was
never on that. I don't recall if we ever had
plates on the wall.
But you know what? I just looked at a video of Anthony T. Browder, who is a guy that goes over and does excavations in Egypt. He's been doing phenomenal stuff. And he said that his mother or grandmother, whomever raised him, came to one of his first lectures. Oh man, I hope I'm not mixing him up.
I think I know what you're gonna say.
It's either Anthony T. Browder or Ashra Kwesi, and both of them make repeated trips to Egypt. Mm-hmm. And one of them said that the woman who raised him came to one of his first teaching gigs and heard him preach about this. And when he was growing up, they had white Jesus, all that on the walls, and that she never said anything about it to him. Mm-hmm. But when he went back some years later home, all of that was gone.
What?
All of that was
gone. No, I definitely didn't know that's what I was thinking. Yes. I was thinking you were saying she, because you know, back in our day, some of the parents, you better not say anything about, they didn't care what you. Don't you say nothing about that, you know.
About that Jesus. Yeah. And they used to have John F. Kennedy. Do you remember that? They had
No. We had that too. We had the plate of John F. Kennedy too.
Okay.
JFK was all, and I kept saying there was one more. So it was the State House. I mean, it was the Capitol, and then there was JFK.
Okay.
And I don't know why I was so fixated on them pictures. They were next to our stove. You know, we had the wooden stove that went up into the chimney.
Oh, really?
So it was beside that wooden stove. So it was not like out in the open like you nowadays houses. So it was like I had to be up in this corner. But I just remember always just sitting up in that corner, staring at those and getting upset about that one picture. And I kept always saying, and then I started picking it apart at a young age. And like I said, when I finally said something to my grandmother, I guess she got sick of me staring at them for the longest time, but I never knew why Reverend Ike was so revered. I never knew.
Knew that he was conscious.
He was a me neither.
On some level, I mean, he couldn't be, but so, well, You can't. There are preachers who know the truth and don't teach the truth.
No, he taught the truth.
I don't know. But I mean, yeah.
But I thought my grandmother had a crush on him. Like, I thought he was just like the Billy Dee of her time. Because the picture was a beautiful man.
Yeah, he wasn't unattractive.
No, he was a beautiful man, especially on that Olin Mills type of portrait picture. Mm-hmm. He was gorgeous. So I thought that was her honeysuckle. And she used to be like, you know, if I ain't had my husband, I thought that's what he was to her. But then now that he pops up on my phone all the time, I'm like,
he was speaking some word.
He was woke.
At least in that, I haven't watched anything else of his.
Oh, they got so many good clips. Like,
don't you know that the divine is in you? Yes. And that's what the African spirituality that I've been learning about, that's what they teach as well. There's no God out there. Like, all of us are a manifestation of God.
About what you just said. Mm-hmm. Right? Think about what you just said about God is in us and the manifestation is in us, right? We manifest.
We are a manifestation of him.
Yes, we are the manifestation of him, meaning we have the power within us to manifest what everybody says he gives to us. You know, like if we want goodwill, if we want education, if we want love, if we want divineness, all of that is already in us. He gave us that because we are of him. But do you realize how, and I'm saying this from experience, so that's why I'm able to probably relate. Some people are able to relate to this feeling. It's a fear to say that you're okay. It's like almost like a cockiness to be able to say, you know, no, you're not giving yourself that. God gave that to you. And you're like, but that is me. That is God who I'm giving props to. Giving myself that props and saying, I'm doing well for myself. I'm eating right. I'm doing right. I'm learning. I'm, you know, doing everything that I need to do is giving him props. That is a fear for some people. I had to shake that fear a little while ago.
And you know, when you first start saying, I am a God, I am a goddess, whatever, a lot of people have a problem. Like, what, all of that, that can be problematic. And I do understand what you're saying about how people can fear the notion, your body is the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Your body is the temple, not the church building.
And I developed, I don't know, I guess since I was very young, I always said that I was perfect because I heard somebody say that God was perfect when I was young.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then I heard somebody tell me that I was made in God's image. Mm-hmm. So, or that we are made in God's image. So I was always like, well, if he's perfect and he made me, then shouldn't I be perfect too? How am I going to be less than the person that made me? Mm-hmm. So it always resonated with me to be like, no, I'm perfect. You can't make me, you can't hurt me. Because whatever you're saying, it doesn't even matter because I'm perfect. Even my mistakes are perfect. And I never felt like I was saying it in a cocky way. I always felt like I was saying it in a confidence way. Like, I might not know how to spell this, write this, speak this, know this, but that's part of my perfection. You know, that's how God made me. So I never knew to not say things that was already godly. You know, and God never seemed like he wanted to punish me for saying that I was, because my God is female and male.
Yeah, it's not
just, I don't see just or feel just the man in me. There's days I feel my God is all woman, all, you know, embracing me in her arms and hugging me and telling me I'm okay. And then I feel sometimes there's that masculine one who's behind me like, go ahead, I got you. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody gonna mess with you. I promise you that. You know, I feel both of those. So that's why I always say I don't understand why we were so programmed to feel like we can't say we're great.
Not only that, it's
and we're perfect in every way
that you were able to intuitively understand those kinds of things. But truthfully, I never did. I went mm-hmm. to church. I was a Baptist. I voluntarily got baptized in mm-hmm. high school. I was always taught that God is out there, or up there, or mm-hmm. somewhere else. Not that we're God, but he is out there, up there, somewhere. I pray to him mm-hmm. in Jesus's name, because the only way you could get to God was through Jesus. And all I bought into all See, of that.
So was that a fear when you had to cut those ties for the new life of what you know now?
No, because by then I had already come to some of my racial viewpoints, and I understood that that was a part of the programming and the brainwashing they used to subdue us and keep us subjugated. So I was happy to be tossing that off. But I will tell you the one thing it was hard for me to do mm-hmm. is to engage in ancestor reverence, because there's such a taboo on that. You know, like if I tell my mother I'm in Africa, that means you worship your ancestors. No, it doesn't, but it's that whole thing. So it took me a while to come to a place where I could revere, mm-hmm. respect, and appreciate the assistance my ancestors give me, and understand that's not the same as worshiping. That's not making them into the divine. That's mm-hmm. accepting and appreciating everything they do for me.
Absolutely. And now that is a fear of mine, not making sure that I don't give praises to who came before me. That is, I walk on eggshells when it comes to that, because I know, you know, I just, whatever is true, whatever that I've been told that was true, whatever I think that was true, whatever they went through, being thrown off a boat, being whipped, being chained, being
just hurts my heart.
Kidnapped, you know, being separated from your language and your family, your religion, your food, everything that they say, I'm the humblest. So if that is part of something I'm not, then I'll take that up with the divine when I, you know, see him or see her, because I can't not respect that.
That's beautiful. That. I do now. Mm-hmm. I do now. And I mean, our time is up. We got to come back to this. It's just so much to unpack with that. But I do now. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for them. And I can look around in my life and see how, even when I didn't know they were there, mm-hmm. they were there looking out for me. And I just am grateful. But okay, so topic number three, which is something we touched on before, but you know, this is probably always going to come up because it's such a big thing, mm-hmm. is the gay agenda.
Okay.
How we've seen it in these last few weeks, in terms of some things you share with me. I'll allow you to just talk about what you've seen and we can dive right into it.
Well, the first one was Bootsy Bad Butt. So it's usually with the A, but I'm just going to say it for whoever's listening. And then the second one was with John Sally, but it also refers all the way back to the David Chappelle in a dress.
And Kevin Hart in the dress. And
yes. Well, David Chappelle refused to wear the dress, the Hollywood dress, the initiation dress, or whatever they want to call it. I don't know if it's an initiation thing. I don't know if they think it sells and it's a big comedy thing. I have no clue what it is. I've never been told by anybody of power in Hollywood that it is initiation or it's a moneymaker. I've never been told. But according to John Sally, he was asked that they skipped over even the dress part with him to just be a gay character and Family Guy. And he was just like, the gay
modern, uncle? Modern Family.
Oh, Modern Family. I'm sorry. I thought it was Family Guy. Mm-hmm. But it might have been Modern Family. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But he told us that he did turn down $22 million.
He said flat out no.
No.
Like, no. And they were like, they offered him 15 first, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then when he said no, they immediately went to 22 million and he told them it's not about the money, which made me really proud of him.
And I was proud too. And the reason why I'm proud, because he's straight. Yeah. And I understand we want actors to act, but there's so many gay guys that would love to have that role. And there's so many gay guys who's genuinely gay who could take that role. Why take a straight guy and make him want him to show the world, okay, you have to be comfortable with this because, or you have to accept this. I just think that's wrong.
And you know what? That harkens back to the conversation we just had initially, because in order to effectively play a gay guy, if you're straight, you're gonna have to learn effeminate mannerisms, ways of talking, figures of speech, all that sort of stuff. I'm proud of him for saying no. I didn't analyze it to the level you did, like, whatever that guy, Billy Porter, who keeps freaking wearing dresses everywhere he goes.
Oh, you heard last week what happened?
No, what?
A lot of things got canceled because of him, because people saying that they were over that image. They're sick of it being in their face. And I thought I sent it to you. I was like, look at this. Like,
yeah, but I'm
a
so
lot of cancel culture came through.
You know, gowns and the good dress. And it's like, dude, you can be gay without showing up in lady clothing every time I see you. What is the problem?
And it's different. Oh, I have a different approach, because I think when I used to watch old what they called them, exploitation movies.
Black exploitation.
Yeah, the guys who were pimps would wear like the platform boots and the colorful suits, and they were very feminine, but they still came across as masculine. So I want to know where it
back then, Tora. I think all that pimp swag was, even though you and I know they were wearing heels, I don't think people really looked at it.
No,
like
they
that.
Didn't. It was part of the flavor.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was just part of the flavor, the sprinkles on top. It wasn't anything in our face. It right. was more so that brother's bad. Look at him. You know, I don't think anybody looked at it like, girl, you doing that. I don't think anybody looked at
it
like that.
No, it was none of that. It was none
so
of that.
So why can't it still be masculine because you're a male and put your masculine flair on it? Like, I don't think everything has to be so bustier, feminine on a man. I don't think that's beautiful. I just don't think that's
beautiful. I don't like that either. But, you know, I just scroll through. I pass over it. I'm way over it by now. But
nothing is more beautiful to me than the male body. So why are we making it feminine?
Especially if it's in shape. Oh, my God. I've had all these people, all these Africans on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I travel there, they're always hitting me up to be friends. Lately... and I don't always accept them, but lately they have been so buff that I don't even care. But confirm. I'm like, yes, be on my timeline when I turn.
Like eye candy. It's beautiful eye candy.
Yes.
Well, but that's what I'm saying.
Also, it goes back to what little Boosie was saying. He was saying that every show,
mm-hmm.
Even the cartoons, everywhere we look, it's just gay. That's too much. It's just too much.
Too much.
Hmm?
You know why it's too much? Because they're making it sexual. If it was just gay, I think we could all watch it and just give it. But they take everything and with gayness and make it about sex. And if that's what it's all about, then you're putting something on people who aren't ready for it or just don't like it. Like I tell people, I'm not even big on heterosexual gay sex scenes in a movie. So I wouldn't be that big on gay sex scenes at all.
But you know what? Even if it's not sex, for Lil Boosie's point, why are you putting that in cartoons? Kids are 5, 6, 7.
It's sexual.
But even if it's not sex, you want them to see dad and dad, mom and why? Like, why? Why is that critical that in every freaking cartoon? Now, if they just put it in 5% of cartoons or 1% of cartoons, I'm not sure that anybody will complain. But it's in 99%.
So you don't have to have a choice. They're making it so you don't have to have a choice on accepting it. And they keep using Black people and Black folks as the agenda. Like, it's just like being Black. And it's like, are you kidding me? We can't change this thing.
Now, let's take a little moment to recognize our sponsors. We will now return to our current episode.
This is not our sexual thing. This is our being. Like, that's not the same. You can go back one day if you change your mind and be a man or a woman, whatever you originally were.
And you can hide it.
Go back.
And you can be gay and hide it. And you can be in the closet and nobody knows that you're gay. They're going to treat you.
Mike still was a Black man, wasn't he?
I wouldn't want to, but how are we going to hide this? It's just not, it's not possible.
Was Michael Jackson still a Black man, no matter what his skin color changed? Did you ever see him? We all knew that. So that's my point.
Lil Kim too. All of them who are doing that.
That's my point.
It's so sad.
People are Black, regardless of what you color you want to paint yourself to be. I don't care. You know, and I know, we all know, you're still Black. But when you change your sex, we're supposed to say no now, you're not a man?
So,
you're not saying Mike was, you know, whatever he was trying to be, Asian, Caucasian, whatever.
Michael Jackson?
Yeah. Whatever his skin color changed and his nose changed to be, never once said, well, just leave the guy alone. He wants to be whatever, white, Caucasian, Asian, let him be. You know what I'm saying? You never said that. You always said he's still Michael Jackson and he's still a man. And he's still a Black man.
And we also said, oh, I feel so sad for him because he used to be so handsome as a Black man. And for some reason, however he came up, whatever was done to him, he never understood how attractive. We all used to, oh, fall out over little.
There were periods where we said, if he had stopped right there, just right there, it was good enough. He still was good, good, good. You know, like we remember that, you know, during the bad days and the beat it days.
Oh, yeah. Like,
that was his, okay, you can have surgery, Mike, but you still look good, you know. But I think that that's different from gay, because you change your sex, just like Mike changed his color and nose, and he still was a man and still was a black man, but now you want to be a woman or a man because you changed your sex. It's like, that's not fair. Because if that's the case, y'all know, I always say it, I'm changing me tomorrow. I'm going to be rich, and I don't know if I want to be an Italian, Spanish, but whatever getting benefits right now, free benefits, and the doors opening for them left and right, and they getting money thrown at them, I want to be her. I don't know what she is. I don't know what nationality, who's getting it right now, because Karen is in all shapes, sizes, and colors except for black right now. So I don't know. But I want to be a rich Karen, and we accepting and identifying with, because she's not going to jail. She questioning the police. She's spitting on them, fighting them. She's slapping people, not going to jail. Her kids not getting pulled over and shot. I want to sign up for her. I want to sign up for rich Karen, no matter what race she is. And I want to identify with her and get treated like her.
So, you know, with the gay agenda thing, Boosie was saying he thinks they're doing it for money. I don't think so, but how, I don't know.
How?
I don't even know how they do it for money. But he said the only reason they're doing it is for money. I think they're doing it to convert more people, to have, even from a young age, children questioning what their sexuality is and who they're attracted to. And then for me, it's always a bigger agenda, because he said, you know, they're putting it on our culture. So obviously, if women are with women and men are with men, you're not making any children. You're not reproducing. You might can adopt a child. You might can get a donor or something, but you as a couple have no ability, man and man or woman and woman, to reproduce. And obviously in my mind, I just saw a, what's that lady, Margaret Sanger? She's the one who did Planned Parenthood. I just saw a meme of her saying that apparently she said that our genes, Black people's genes, are too strong and that they need to get rid of us. And I think—
I did not know that was her agenda from day one. And then as time went on, she became a savior to women's rights and Planned Parenthood. I did not know her agenda started off with, she was trying to control the birth rate of Black and
brown. Planned Parenthood fits right into that, because that was abortions. So they were, you know, that taught Black women, whether that taught Black women to abort their babies. So every abortion—
they gave them the out to abort babies.
See—
because I believe—
choice. I believe in choice too, but yeah. I understand that when you abort your babies, you are decreasing your population. So if she wanted to decrease the population of Blacks, then those, they're so slick. Those clinics, which appear to be benevolent and helping us, were actually harming us by serving her goal. Because before Planned Parenthood and all that, certainly women had abortions anyway, but it was dangerous and scary. And I know there were probably a lot of women who thought to do it, but didn't do it because of all the stories of the women who died in the back alleys and all of that.
Yeah.
Once Planned Parenthood came along, you got a nice, sterile, comfortable place to go that's medical model. It encouraged it. And, you know, I know some women, I knew some women who were using abortions
as birth control.
There you go.
I did too. Not that I did too, I do too. I know them to this day. And I'm talking about, if I told you the numbers they had, you would not believe.
I still know them. I don't really interact with them, but you're right. I still
know. Like I don't interact with them at all, but I know them. Like know they're still around and I know them, not in my life or anything, but they're still on this earth. And I'm just
And I mean, like if I run into, I don't hate, if I, you know, they're people I know, I'd be like, hey girl, whatever, whatever. But yes, I know those women too. And see, to me, I don't want everything to be about race, but it is. White people are so slick to make you think that they're doing something to help you when they're really harming your entire race. She really served her entire purpose. She didn't change. She didn't change. She just found an acceptable way to do it and a way to sell us on it. Because you're not going to win with us coming at us saying your genes are too strong. We gotta sterilize you. We gotta make you kill your baby. That's not going to work. But you come off as, I believe in pro-choice, Roe versus Wade, all this BS that they built.
Also women's health, you know, so you're saying that, say you got pregnant by an unwanted pregnancy or rape or molesting or whatever, you're there to, and I'm just like, just saying this, trust me, I'm against everything that they're against, I'm against too. If you don't want that growing inside of you, hey, come on, I'll help you pay for it. But
I don't really have an opinion.
I'm not against it.
You can or cannot. Right. Or should
but
or cannot.
If you have something that you think is established for that reason, but you fall into the gray area of that and say, well, I wasn't raped or molested, but I had a boyfriend that we broke up and we're no longer together and I'm only a few weeks and I don't want my life ruined. Then you're thinking, well, I'll use this avenue that's set up for them and their mental health and health to help me. But at the end of the day, that baby probably could have been raised in a family home, loving, whatever, but you wouldn't think to do that because you had this out. You know what I mean?
And even people that were still with their boyfriend or their husband or whatever, and or a married man or whatever.
Yeah, I know one that did that. Yeah.
And they got pregnant and they're still together, but they're not ready to have a baby. It wasn't planned or whatever. And they go and they it made abortion a widely accepted thing to do. And it had the effect, you know, our numbers, we don't reproduce at the numbers we used to. We're more like Europeans now. Yeah. You have 3 kids. I have 2 kids. Back in the day, they had 8, 10.
My mother sat in the car last night and told me my great grandmother, who I knew very well, she lived well at 95 years old. 96, she told me. Well, yeah, I asked her how old she, and she was like, she was 96. But she had all her scruples. She wasn't like senile or Alzheimer's back. I don't know, maybe they didn't have it when I was young, but she didn't have it. And I remember our last conversation with my great-grandmother, and she was talking about my grandfather. And I said to my mother, I said, why did she say, I'm so glad you were my last born? When she, because I asked her, did she remember that conversation? She was like, because she had 15 head of children. You know how she... women talk, head of children. I said,
15 what children?
15 head, H-E-A-D, 15 head of children. Yeah, that's like a head of lettuce. So it's like,
but 15 head of children.
Uh-huh.
Well, my grandmother had 10. 5 of them died thanks to...
She just said that too. Mm-hmm.
But she had 10. And on the other, and my other grandmother had about 6 or 8. They just used to have a lot of children, but we don't have that culture anymore.
And they had them. Not just for business purposes, they had them because there wasn't abortions around.
And no
birth control. So they had them because they helped the farming, they helped the businesses.
That's what I was going to say. Because there were herbs and things, and I think they were closer to those remedies than we are.
Mm-hmm.
Could have taken to get rid of the child early on, but mm-hmm. they were farmers. And the more kids you had, the more land you could farm. So it was beneficial. Okay, so our last and final topic is what we saw on social media about Illinois becoming the first state to require Asian American history mm-hmm. to be taught in public schools.
Public schools, not college, not take a college course, because you know that you can take African American studies or history in college. I didn't take it in high school. I took American history in high school, but I did not take any private Black history class in high school at all. It wasn't offered. I asked my children, was it offered in theirs? They said no. You know, they would have liked it, but it wasn't. But they did take it in college, but both of them kind of go to a public college, but it's not predominantly Black or historically Black. So it's not going to be like a Howard University course. But still, I'm offended because you skip right over us, you know? Like
Again. I have a question in my mind now. What are they trying to do to us with regard to Asians, because they skipped over us on the hate crime legislation, even as we're being gunned down in the street, and gave an Asian hate crime bill and money set aside, significant money set aside for that. Now they're saying, they're passing laws saying we can't teach critical race theory regarding African Americans and their history in this country in public schools.
It's taking us out, taking all the women out of the history of, you know, all the great women.
All the black
men too. Yeah.
I mean, they said you can't mention Martin Luther King. They had a Frederick Douglass. They had a whole list of people that we all would want to know about that couldn't be mentioned. But now, on the other hand, they're legislating that they must teach Asian American history. And I haven't had enough time to really think about what the consequences of that are. But it's almost like they're moving them in some kind of space that should be reserved for us, but they're not. But I mean, I'm just flabbergasted.
And I try to have an open mind. So I try to say to myself, is there someone or an organization that's sitting around saying, well, maybe they wouldn't treat us like this if they knew we were part of their history or history. So maybe if we show
Asians,
anyone, even if it's the government of, you know, a Caucasian government, you know, even if they're saying it, maybe they wouldn't treat Asians this way, or maybe Asians, you know, because they're in a committee now, they're in, they have a seat at the table, they can talk now and say what, you know, their opinions on stuff. But I was saying that maybe they're saying that maybe they wouldn't treat us like this if they knew our history and what part we played in it. But then I said, how is that gonna make a difference? We should be proof that that doesn't work. Because we've been around forever, and you know our history, and you know the part we played, and you know what we've conquered, and you know what we've built. And if they still treating us like this, what would make you think just because we learn your history, you're going to get treated any different?
I don't think there's any Asian American senators or state senators that are passing these bills. These are white people. And right. The thing that I'm just going
to
keep
it. But the Asians have seat at the table to talk to these people.
They do. We don't, because their skin is not our skin. It's some kind of issue with race, I'm sorry to say, and there is an agenda. And the question that I have is, well, the issue that I have is, I don't think I'd have a problem with Asians having an Asian hate crime bill and money set aside,
right,
with Asian history being taught in public schools, if we were given those things as well, preferably
first, not as well, first.
Yeah, we both say that at the same time, at the very least as well.
Right. But
the problem that I have is that you're saying we're excluded. First of all, we only had a month anyway, and then you just get
the shortest month of the year.
Yes, and you the shortest month, you get the same Sojourner Truth. I mean, it's the same little handful of people that they taught you about every year. And so the problem I have is they're pushing all of that out and saying, but we must focus on Asian Americans. We must protect them in this country. We must teach their history in this country. And that is some, I don't know what exactly, but that's some kind of racist agenda.
But then when you say Asians, are we talking about the whole Asian race, like everyone who has the background of Asians, like you're talking about from Vietnamese to Chinese to Japanese to, you know, because my
thing is Asian is they didn't say Japanese American, Chinese American, Korean American, they said Asian American.
So
the whole continent with all those
crazy because that's basically like we as Africans, we had different, you know, we had different continents. I mean, and we had different everything, not just we had different planets, is what I'm discovering right now in my studies. But
you are really going in on
the my God, you don't even know. Like some of the things I've been saying, like, oh, I don't even know if that's supposed to be let out the gate yet. But yeah, we've been everywhere, and it's like they're not even telling our story yet. Like, you gotta tell our story and how much we are all around the world and where we were first. Like, we were in West Virginia coming home. No, we're coming home from Buffalo, and they have these, these extreme mountains, but they're perfectly peaked. And I said, you know that they discovered, now I had to say it like this because I don't want to sound crazy, but you know that they discovered pyramids here.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So they dressed them up with these beautiful trees now, but this one, I guess, either it caught on fire or the drought or the less rain, but it shedded its trees. So then this pyramid peaked out and now they can't hide it.
Stones? It was stones?
It was stone pyramids that was here in the United States of America. And they just washed over like it was not even a story. And I kept telling my daughter, I was like, yeah, y'all know that could be a pyramid right there. Like, look how perfect. So she was taking all these pictures and I'm just thinking that would prove.
Well, they're in the Grand Canyon. I've seen them in the Grand Canyon as well. Oh. I've seen them in, obviously, in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I've seen them in Sub-Saharan Africa.
And Mexico, you know, they don't call them.
The myth is that they were only in Egypt, but we, see, that's what we talked about. We are the original people. We were everywhere. And I just recently heard that one of the reasons that white people are so threatened by us and so intent on destroying us is because, you know, we populated the earth. We walked out of Africa and migrated into Asia, into what is now Europe, because that's all one continent when you look at the map. They're not separate. You know, Eurasia
was separated. We walked into stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we migrated into Eurasia and all these places. And when the whites were there, you know, came out of their caves and began to explore the world, they saw us everywhere. And it just, I guess it, I don't know. I guess it just overwhelmed them and made them realize, I guess, what a threat we are. There is an agenda, but I don't know why they're going so hard on the Asians. Even if they were, I bet you Latinos are next. I mean, I think it's like anybody but those Negroes.
I think this is it. If you're going to mate with someone, and I don't know if they don't know it or not, but we, of course, if you mate with us, we're going to be dominant some kind of way. That gene is going to lie down dormant and it can come out dominant many, many years down the road. People try to say you can wash it out, but I don't believe you can. So I believe if they
you can wash it out. Think if you just keep going white, then you get the curse of blackness out of your family.
And I believe that even that one day you wake up with this baby, because why this baby is brown and you and your man both look, because it's been showing up like lately. I don't know if you've been seeing it.
I haven't seen it.
The men are like, you slept around on me. They're asking for DNA now in the delivery room. They're like, as soon as the baby come out now, these men are asking for DNA right in the, because they're like, these babies are coming out brown. And both of these couples look Caucasian. So what's going on? But it's a dominant gene that can lay dormant. But my thing is this, if you're going to mate with the Asian race now and you're going to integrate the Asian race, maybe you think you get the brains that they've been told that they have, and then you get the skin and the hair and you can still have something. I don't know if that's it. But what I'm saying is, like, that would be
an idea why in part they're doing this. Because as we all know, melanated people are the global majority. And all the statistics now are saying that whites are not reproducing and mm-hmm. they're becoming a minority, even in the United States.
Asians got billions.
But Asians have white skin. Mm-hmm. Even though we know they're not Caucasian, they do have white skin. If you could put them together mm-hmm. with the Caucasians, mm-hmm. maybe you could give the appearance that their number is larger than it is. Because I've been trying to figure out, what is this obsession that America seems to have with Asians? Maybe that plays a part in it. I didn't think about that until you were talking, though.
Yeah, I sit around and I think sometimes, like, you know, what most things, if it's not money involved, it's survival. So how can you survive? And usually when I see things and I hear, just like I was talking to two of my male associates, friends, / who are Caucasian, when Donald Trump won the election, I said, how do you all sit right with yourself if you won something that doesn't belong to you? And they said to me, a win is a win is a win. And that always stayed with me.
Black people don't feel that way.
I was saying.
My kids that way either. If you have to cheat to win, you did not win.
And you don't deserve it, and you don't need to feel good about it.
Oh, no.
And that's why I don't understand.
You should feel guilty because you cheated. That's not a win.
Right. And that's why I never understood black crime. Like, this man went out and got all this money and you think you can just come along, take it, and you think you're going to just go buy a car and a house and enjoy the rest of your life with it. Like, I never could understand that black on black crime. I just could not, because it always, I thought we always had that soul within us that we needed to feel good about something.
You know, I think some of that is desperation. I think that when you don't have any food, you don't have this, you don't have that. Sometimes the poverty that exists among our people is so extreme that it makes you do things that you wouldn't otherwise do.
You hear what you just said? Out of desperation. So my thing is this, I just saw two men who were Black who haven't eaten. One hasn't eaten in 10 years. The other one hasn't eaten a solid food or anything in 2 years. 2 years. He started, the bodies were like a goon. So
really?
I'm the one person, I couldn't believe it, but they followed him with a camera and no solid food whatsoever in their bodies. No,
what are they juicing or something?
Not even juicing. They just, everything they get in nourishment has been, and I saw it one other time years ago. It was almost like the guy looked like he was, I can't even tell you the nationality.
Well, what are they eating though? I mean, what are they using to sustain? Everything they get is what?
Everything he's getting is minerals from the air and I will send it to you because I couldn't figure it out. But
are they eating something, or you're saying they've not eaten?
Nothing, no fish.
I have a girlfriend who insists that we never used to eat. We didn't have to. We got all our food and nourishment from the sun.
Well, listen, same sun. He said it was one woman, but I can't find the article on the woman. And the reason why I looked at that up is because we didn't used to have cycles either. Because I always said, well, what did y'all do for periods? Like mine used to be the worst. So I always want to know if somebody lived, and I hate saying the word third world because someone cursed me out about saying that about our ancestors, that they lived in a third world country. But the world that portrayed as Africa
was the first world. But mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Right, the first world country. What did they do for tampons and pads? I always was fascinated with that. Like, what did you do? And where did you go to the bathroom? And what did you clean yourself with or urinate? Like, it was always a fascination for me. And then I found that there was women and you didn't have a cycle. Think about it. Athletes who work out like track stars don't have cycles.
I forgot the word, but yeah, that is a thing.
So we not too far from the truth, you know?
That's the thing. That is a thing because they have fertility issues, but they're able to get pregnant. And I mean, it was thought that they had fertility issues, but many of them are able to get pregnant and everything.
Yeah. So that's me. Once I hear a little bit of a truth being realistic, like when I heard people with less fat and muscles don't have their cycles or get their cycles late in life, that's me. Let me know that some of this is true. Some of this is true that maybe our genes used to be so, you know, Wakanda-like, that we were so warriors and so strong and so muscular as women, not manly muscular, but you know what I'm talking about, fit.
On our body. Healthy.
We didn't need to have our body waste reduced to.
Please send me that because I would love to know how we could live without eating. That might be some important information to.
Now listen, we can. Yeah. And the reason why, because I would love to have this girlfriend of mine on, but I was back in my younger days when I was only like 98 pounds and 25 years old, I said to my girlfriend one day, oh my God, oh my God. And she said, what? I said, I haven't eaten like a week. And she said, what? Girl, shut up. That is such a lie. You're such a liar. What do you mean you haven't eaten a week? But I was so stressed out. I was so, something horrific was going on in my life. And I was so stressed out. I hadn't eaten in a week. And my brain somehow did not manifest food or water. But she went through it. She got in a relationship, and I don't care because she'll tell you, but she was beat to a pulp by this guy. He took her money, beat her to a pulp. She went into deep depression. And I probably like the fifth day in this depression, she called me and she said, I apologize. And I said, what's wrong? You know, I already knew what she was going through. I was like, what do you apologize? And I thought she was ready to do something crazy. I was like, well, I'm on my way. So I get to her and I'm like, what's going on? Why are you saying this? She said, she was probably like 98 pounds at this point, not before, but I hadn't seen her in a while. We just, you know, would talk, but she was probably 98 pounds at this point, no drugs, not anything she was doing. But she said, remember I told you one time, if you're a liar, there's no way in the world you went a week without eating or drinking and you couldn't even remember. She said, I literally got out the bed yesterday because my mother came into my house and said, you haven't eaten or drank in a week. You're going to die if you keep laying here. She said, no, you're not. No. And she couldn't believe it. She said she went that whole week laying in her bed, just crying, and hadn't got out to go to the bathroom or ate. And I was like, it wasn't a surprise thing to me. So when I did hear the thing about there was people who, that's why I more so gravitated to it instantly when I heard about the guy, because I kept thinking, well, I'm glad I got out of the, because you know that people say if you haven't eaten or drank in 2 or 3, 24, so many hours, you can die. I always say that's a lie because I know it's not true.
Fast all the time. No, that's not true. But I never heard of anybody doing it. I'm trying to think though, vaguely, that's in the back of my mind. Vaguely, I think I may have seen or heard something about that. But you know, this is the last thing I'm going to say because obviously our time's up. But somebody I watched pointed out that they've been slowly poisoning us from birth. From as soon as we're born, they inject stuff into us. There's the chemtrails, there's the fluoride and chlorine and all that in the water. And so we've forgotten who we are and we're unable, I don't say unable, but we don't remember how to be who we really are. And they constantly, the fast food, all that stuff is constantly poisoning us, decreasing our lifespan and keeping us from remembering the magnificent creatures that
where we- Where do panic attacks and anxiety attacks come from? I suffer from them. And I know that it's over years of something going on medically. I know it is. I know it is. Too many people I know have the exact same experience I have. And I'm just like, how?
Did you have that as a child?
Never.
Oh, okay.
Fearless. I could run up walls, jump off roofs, do anything. I mean, when I see my kids in gymnastics, I used to always be like, they get it from me. I mean, they were fearless. I never owned anxiety. And it came full force as I got older. And I just know that it's something changed chemically in the air and the food and the water, whatever. I don't know. Something changed. It's just too many people say they suffer from the exact same thing. And, you know, unless we stop eating.
I mean, I need to see that because you know what? That may come, there may be a point where we need to be able to survive without eating. So I'd like to see how we might be able to do that. But think I think this.
How many people probably survived the slave ship and the Holocaust without eating for a while?
For a good while.
For a good while.
All right. Well, I think that is it. We've come to the end of our episode. As always, we're so grateful you joined us. We've enjoyed it. And
I will always say thank you for kicking it with Kim and Tora. Please like, subscribe, share, and pass it on. We need everybody to please say your opinions. We want to answer more questions.
That's it. We'll see you next time.